Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, joined with Shadmar Twitz. We are leading you through this weekend edition as we are going to be focusing a bit on the metals and also on the markets again. And it was a wild ride, at least early on this week, for metals investors, precious metals investors especially, as we saw that almost flash crash on Sunday night. Shad and I are kicking off the show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, we're going to focus a bit on gold here because you write about gold fairly regularly. We've chatted about it, but there are a couple topics that I really want to get your insights on and really dive into here. Starting off with, look, the gold price, it's still up in the 1700s, about 1750 as we are recording this. But when you balance that out with real rates, so real interest rates, that's a balance between what the inflation data is telling us and where interest rates are, we're seeing negative rates. Real rates so low that we haven't really seen this too much, at least in the past decade. This should be one of the fundamental drivers for the gold price to move higher. However, I think you can make the argument that gold is maybe underperforming considering how low real rates are. Jesse, what's your takeaway from this?
Yeah, in my view, based on if you just look at the relationship between the real 30-year yield, and I'm just, you know, take the 30-year treasury yield less core CPI and, you know, the gold price year over year, gold should be over 3,000 an ounce right now based on where the real rate is. I mean, we're negative. Core CPI is, you know, 4% plus, and the 30-year yield is 2. So we're deeply, deeply negative, like we haven't seen really since the 1970s. And I think there's, you know, so gold is, I mean, maybe 70-80% undervalued based on that relationship. Now, so it's important to recognize when something's not acting as it should, that's the market sending you a signal. And, you know, that, you know, there's something else potentially going on that we should be paying attention to. Now, my friend Tom McClellan just published a piece today on this very topic suggesting that the reason gold's not acting the way it should is that investors are worried about the Fed tightening, right? Typically, when you see negative rates to this degree, it's a clear sign that the Fed is behind the curve, and not just behind the curve, but like dramatically so. And so the Fed needs to taper and tighten, raise interest rates relatively quickly. And so I think, right, it makes sense to want to avoid precious metals in that environment and when the Fed turns hawkish. So, you know, that seems to make sense to me. Now, we're also in a situation that we've never seen before, though. I mean, it's kind of very something similar to what we've seen in the 70s, as I said, where the Fed should be tightening. But what's different this time is the Fed has said we're going to let inflation run hot. And I really do believe the Fed is in a situation where they can't tighten anywhere near to the degree that they need to. So look in the past, in order to actually have a tightening of monetary policy, you'd need to raise the Fed funds rate above the rate of inflation and, you know, core inflation right now. So you're talking about a Fed funds rate of 5%, roughly, you know, minimum to really start to tighten policy right now. But even, you know, if they were to raise Fed funds to 3 or 4%, that would crash the stock market. Look back at 2018. And the last time, you know, Fed funds was creeping up and the Fed was trying to address inflation, stock market cratered in the fourth quarter of 2018, and the Fed completely chickened out, reverse course, and had to get easy again. And even in, you know, 2019, start QE up again, as, you know, we saw problems in the repo market. So I don't think there's any way the Fed is going to tighten policy enough to really address inflation. They may begin to taper by the end of the year, early next year. I mean, they're printing, trillions of dollars on an annual basis. And so with inflation doing what it's doing, to be sitting at 0% interest rates, essentially have negative 450 basis points real rates at the short end is absolutely insane when we're seeing inflation rise to the degree that it's doing right now. So I do think at some point we're gonna hit an inflection point where people realize that the Fed is not going to be able to address inflation. They're not going to be able to taper completely, or they're not going to be able to raise interest rates, because the stock market's going to react. As soon as they start to taper or raise interest rates, stock market's going to tank. And at that point, the Fed's going to say, hey, are we willing to create a stock market crash and hence, you know, recession? And I just don't think they're willing to do that. They would rather have inflation run hot. And there's, you know, on top of all this, there's an incredible amount of political pressure to not go become too hawkish this early in a recovery, right? The fiscal authorities and the Fed have been heavily criticized for not doing enough coming out of the financial crisis to bring unemployment down and support the economy. And so they're going to go the opposite direction this time. We're going to do too much. If we're going to err on the side of anything, it's going to be to do too much fiscally, too much monetarily. And that's what we're seeing. And they're not going to reverse policy because they don't want to be criticized for not doing enough. So there's going to be an inflationary epiphany here sometime over the next few months where I think investors are going to realize inflation is not transitory. Fed's not going to do enough to rein it in. And I have to protect myself. And at that point, gold is going to reprice rapidly higher.
Yeah, Jesse, bring up some interesting points there, just simply because we have both the fiscal and monetary policies running wild. The talk of tapering and dialing back their bond purchases is still up in the air, whether the Fed's going to do that. And then the talk of tightening with them pushing it back so far, it's a very strange environment. We've had some generalist investors on that have made the case that for gold to really move higher, we'd need the Fed to finally cry uncle and admit that inflation is running hotter and start to hike rates. But when other central banks have tried that in other countries, they've kind of fallen on their face and had to reverse course. So do you think that if we did have that scenario where the Fed cried uncle and they were forced to hike rates and maybe it hurt the markets, as you alluded to, would that be what gold needs to really get off the mat and start moving again?
I don't think it even needs that. I don't think the Fed, it's going to take a lot, right? I mean, if you look back at the previous time we saw this type of inflationary cycle, And I do believe it's interesting to me when I hear people say, well, if inflation, you know, increases or appears in the future, and I'm like, what are you talking about, right? Inflation is already the highest we've seen in a generation, right? I mean, we're seeing core inflation and all of these measures, PPI, you know, came out today, levels we haven't seen in a long, long time, 10%, you know, on annualized rates here. So inflation is here. And the Fed is at 0% and printing over $1 trillion a year. That's the reality of monetary policy. They've probably never been this far behind the curve in history. So I don't think the Fed is going to be able to catch up. We're not. Jay Powell is the anti-Paul Volcker, right? Paul Volcker was the guy who said, okay, I'm going to create a recession. I'm going to create pain. I don't care what happens to the stock market. We have to get inflation under control. And Jay Powell said the opposite. Right. I don't care if we get inflation or any of these things. We need to solve wealth inequality. We need to bring unemployment down. We need to address the environment. And if inflation is the variable, you know, the cost to that, then we're going to have inflation. And so, he's not going to overnight go from being the anti-Paul Volcker to being the second coming of Paul Volcker. It's just not going to happen. There's too much political pressure, and the Fed will take way too much heat if they were to raise rates, cause a stock market crash, especially right now. I mean, one of the things I worry about is that we've just sucked retail into the markets, into risk assets, probably like we've never seen before, right? Through Robinhood and all these things. If the stock market were to go down 30, 40%, we would have significant social unrest. I mean, right, the Fed would take an unbelievable amount of blame for crashing the stock market. And we potentially see a political revolution in this country. And that may be where we're headed no matter what. But I do think right now the Fed sees that retail has gotten involved in the stock market to a degree we haven't seen maybe ever in this country. And if they were to do anything to hurt the stock market right now, it would create a recession. It would create a huge political backlash. The Fed would take all the blame. And I think they care far more about that right now than allowing inflation to continue to run hot.
So, Jesse, couple points, couple questions here on inflation. One being, well, the Fed is at least saying, still continuing to say that inflation is going to be transitory. Again, only time will either prove them right or wrong, but I want your thoughts on that whole transitory argument. And also, considering how much money the Fed is printing, isn't that leading to these higher inflation numbers in the sense that if they were to wind back policy, maybe inflation would come back with it?
Yeah, what's different this time, you know, so the transitory narrative is complete BS. What does transitory mean? We don't even have a definition for it. But if you look at the trend in core CPI, right, just for the past 5, 6, 7 years, right, we dipped down below trend briefly for the couple of months kind of, you know, in March, April or whatever of last year. But right now we've recovered that all those losses, we came back to trend, and now we're so far above the pre-COVID trend of inflation that transitory to me would mean we would pop up above the trend and then come fall back down to trend, right? And then we would just maintain the inflation trend that we've gotten used to over the last 5, 6 years. Where we're so far already above, we would have to have deflation for the next year or two just for core CPI to get back to trend right now. So we are literally, we've seen a trajectory, a paradigm shift in inflation, and it's right there on the chart for anybody to look at. So it's already beyond transitory. We've already blown that out of the water. So I think that, you know, the idea that it's going to be transitory is simply just a narrative to cover for the Fed being unable to address inflation. They just can't. And so I do think, you know, transitory is just a totally false narrative.
Now, Jesse, just following up on that question, the second part of that question, what about the Fed's printing so much money? Doesn't that lead to more inflation?
Absolutely. Well, you know, we're seeing, there were some, you know, shortages and things, which, you know, we had used car prices and a lot of things that in the CPI numbers over the last few months that probably are truly transitory. But when you're running, you know, when M2 is growing at 25% year over year, and what's really different this time is, you know, in 10 years ago when we were coming out of the financial crisis, the Fed was, you know, pedal to the metal, but the money wasn't really getting into the real economy because the banks weren't able to. The banks were in terrible shape and had to kind of repair their balance sheet, so they couldn't lend and do all these things. But what we've seen with fiscal policy this time is essentially acted, in my mind, like a debt jubilee. We put so much money in the pockets of consumers that they used all that to pay down their debts. It was essentially, like I said, a debt jubilee where we wiped out consumers' debts to a great degree. And they didn't have to pay rent, didn't have to pay mortgages, and then also got cash they used to pay down debts. And so now the banks are in great shape and consumers have a bunch more available credit. So we're seeing credit go, you know, through the roof. We're seeing that, you know, new auto loans and new credit cards and all these things, really new mortgages take off. Home equity lines of credit, things we haven't seen for a long time. That's all inflationary because that's money getting into the real economy, and the banks have a terrific amount of room to lend right now. And I think they're starting to do it in a big, big way. So, yeah, this time, all this money printing the Fed is doing is getting into the real economy. It wasn't 10 years ago, and that's why this time it is inflationary.
Yeah, Jesse, the big knock that we hear all the time and we see it in articles that come out in financial media is that, hey, look, you know, there was all this money printing after the great financial crisis, but it didn't lead to runaway inflation. But what the point that they always skip is there really wasn't that velocity of money and that circulation of money because it wasn't going to the people, wasn't going to the small businesses. It was going into financial institutions that juiced up the markets. This time around, over the last year or so, we've seen the payment protection plan, you know, bail out small businesses. We've seen checks to individuals, and we've seen that money start to circulate in society. And as you say, more lending going on and more loans going on. So you're actually creating real money, and that's creating real inflation and real velocity of money. So do you think there's a point of reckoning where people will realize that the CPI numbers really don't encapsulate it all? There's the hedonic adjustments, there's, you know, how they calculate the rent, and some of the mismatches there. But then there's real life where people go to the store, where they go to events, where they go to different things, and they see real inflation. Is there a point where people, even generalists, start to pick up that it's not transitory? And will that drive some generalist money into the precious metals?
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of generalist money. I think Americans generally are hugely underinvested in real assets and precious metals, hugely overinvested in risk assets and financial assets like stocks and bonds. But there's another really important difference to recognize between the current environment and 10 years ago, too, which is the stock market crashed in 2008 and 9, and that forced a lot of baby boomers to stay in the workforce. They said, I can't afford to retire, so I'm going to work well into my 70s. And that was increased labor supply, right, of people not retiring. Now, what we've seen is the Fed supported risk assets so dramatically this time that the markets came back. And now we're well above where we were in, you know, February of 2020. Prices have screamed higher, and all of these baby boomers can now afford to retire. So now we're seeing a huge surge in retirements, and that's a huge shock to labor supply, which is why, you know, we have, the Fed saying, okay, well, the amount of people in the labor force is shrinking. Yeah, well, you're finally enabling people to be able to retire. And so, you know, the labor market is so much tighter right now than I think they understand, or because we saw all these retirements, and it was, you know, the normal amount of retirements that should happen over the last 10 years, plus people feeling incredibly wealthy from what the stock market has done. And so, yeah, this is another big difference where we didn't really get wage inflation 10 years ago. Now we're really starting to see wage inflation, and we're actually seeing, I think the Fed just reported it today, that, wages up 3.7%, and, it's the highest since 2007, and that's only just starting. You look at, 10 million job openings, and there's not that many people, to fill those jobs. I think there's a million people short of filling all of those jobs. And so that's going to just mean wage inflation kicks in, which supports all this, consumer price inflation that we're seeing, and it becomes a virtuous cycle or a vicious cycle, depending on your view of it, of, higher prices and higher wages. And I think all that leads into the inflation psychology that is really crucial to seeing inflation take off. I think all of that is underway right now.
In all fairness, especially what's going on in the labor market with the older people retiring and opening up these jobs, even though it was forced by the pandemic, it's kind of what the Fed wanted, though. The Fed was waiting for higher inflation, and they did want the job market, at least in the top end, to free up. So the pandemic obviously has moved this along. But Jesse, back to the very start of this. Gold needs to go higher because inflation is running so much higher and interest rates are so low. I've read numerous articles that saying gold is not a good inflation hedge. At least look at the last decade plus. What's your answer to those?
Well, I'm a big fan of Mark Hulbert. I think he was the one who wrote the article in the Wall Street Journal. It came out on Sunday or Monday or something like that. I think he does some tremendous work, but I would there are a few things I would take issue with. The first thing I would point out, though, is that when you see these articles that are, just outright bearish on precious metals, they're usually most valuable as a sentiment indicator more than anything else. Think back to the Let's Be Honest About Gold, It's a Pet Rock article that Jason Zweig published in the Wall Street Journal in summer, I think it was August of 2015, a few months before the bottom. Gold prices were just over 1,000 an ounce. Was one of the best contrarian buy signals I've seen in my career. And I do think we this one that Mark published is just another one. Like my friend Peter Atwater likes to say, media reflects mood. And so these bearish articles are just a reflection of how bearish people are in the precious metals, which to me is just a terrific sign, because I believe we're in the middle of a bull market in precious metals. And this is exactly what bull markets do. They try and convince everybody to get out. And that's how, bull markets, climb a wall of worry. And these are the exact type of worries you need to create in gold bulls to set the stage for the next leg higher. Bloomberg had another article too about how it's just too hard to buy gold right now. Those are just very good contrarian signals. But a couple of things I would take issue with, Mark, is, you know, he pointed out stocks have performed better than gold prices since 1971. What he doesn't mention is that gold is about as undervalued as it's ever been relative to M3 in that period of time. So gold is really, really cheap relative to the money supply. The stock market is the most overvalued it's ever been in history at the same time. So he talks about this relative performance without talking about valuations. And to me, that's disingenuous. You can't look at 50 years worth of performance history and then just create your end date and not recognize that, okay, well, what did it take to create that stock market performance that's so good? It took the biggest bubble in history to create the highest valuations in history in the stock market. It also took a lot of bearish sentiment towards gold prices to prevent gold from not, like I said, being 3,000 an ounce today or higher. So I think those are a couple things, really kind of help that need to be involved in that discussion to really understand, okay, why has gold not performed as well? He also makes the point, too, that gold is expensive relative to CPI. And that implies, right, the underlying assumption there is that CPI is a good measure of inflation and that gold is not a better measure of inflation than CPI is. And I would argue that I would rather have a market-based measure of inflation like gold than a government-created one like CPI. And so and we know that CPI is not a perfect measure by any means of inflation. So to say gold is expensive relative to this government created measure of inflation is something that is in my mind not an effective way to kind of view the gold price. I'd rather view gold as a measure of inflation than any other kind of constructed mathematical measure. So I do think, you know, to come back to my first point, these articles are usually a better measure of investor sentiment than any other, you know, way they could be viewed or used.
All right, Jesse, let's wrap it up on this one comment is that, look, we even get the comment saying, I'm getting tired of these commentators saying gold's going to be 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 for years because we haven't gotten there. We've gotten to 2,100 and topped out and then corrected for over a year now. I realize that when the market wakes up, just a little flood of money could drive the gold price higher. But when's that going to happen, Jesse? People are getting a bit tired of that narrative, I guess.
Well, I love to hear that because that's exactly what I'm hearing from people, too, is the consternation right now among gold bulls is so thick you could cut it with a knife. And to me, that is just a terrific buy signal. I literally couldn't get a better buy signal than, you know, people emailing me and, you know, tweeting at me, hey, what the heck is going, you know, and coming up with conspiracy theories for why gold suppressed all this stuff. It to me, it's just a sign that it's a wonderful time to be a buyer of gold. To me, I'm always surprised how many people tell me, okay, well, maybe we should just sit out right now and wait for it to be a clearer signal to buy gold. And I always say to them, okay, well, if you want to wait for that, you're going to buy it. It's going to be $1,000 an ounce higher if you wait for that time. The time to buy it is when it feels the worst. And the time to, you know, be selling some and taking some money off the table is when everything is going right and it feels great. And so these are the types of things that I think you only learn through experience in the markets. But right now, I literally couldn't, you know, ask for a better bullish signal than this widespread consternation among precious metals aficionados.
All right, Jesse, great comments as always. Good chatting with you. I appreciate you taking the time to join us. I always enjoy reading over everything you write over at the Felder Report, which I will post a link to in that weekend show posting. Jesse, have a great rest of your weekend. Thanks again for your time.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing on with the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments with Jesse Felder. In this segment, we are going to continue to chat about the gold sectors. We are chatting with Craig Hemke, founder and editor of tfmetalsreport.com. So, Craig, it's been a wild ride this week for gold investors because Monday and even late night Sunday, gold went through that flash crash, dropped the whole way down to about that 1670 to 1680 level. And throughout the week, it has taken back pretty much all of those losses. So we're pretty much closing this week at a very similar level to where we were a week prior to. And that is still considering all that negativity, especially at the start of the week, as we saw just everything plummeting in terms of commodities. Now at the end of the week, again, we're at this 1775 level. We're still in this downtrend. The gold has been in ever since August. But what do you take away from that action this week and the quick reversal of what was about $100 loss in gold?
Yeah, well, I tell you, it was painful to watch, shocking to see. But those things happen in a volatile futures market. The fun thing about it, though, and what is advantageous to it now, 5 days later, is that it has given us some very clear things to watch going forward. That we bounced from 1680 in the December front month futures contract. That level was already a double bottom at the previous lows back in March, early March and late March, came down to 1680 and bounced twice from there. So then we have this washout event Sunday night, which, as you said, took us down $80 in a matter of minutes. And we bounced from that very same area. And now the chart, which, you know, many generalists and hedge funds and people look at very closely to try to figure out, you know, discern trend or trend changes. The chart is very clear. That 1680 to 1700 level appears to be very solid support. So if we ever really take that out convincingly, well, we were in a heap of trouble. However, on the upside, where institutional investors and hedge funds and just regular people like you and I, Corey, have been waiting for this to turn because the macroeconomic signals are so strong, like sharply negative real interest rates and inflation soaring, and the producer price index this week annualizing over 12%. And we've been waiting for gold to turn, kind of flustered and bewildered as to why it kept trending lower. Well, now, after this washout low, this double bottom on the chart, price starts moving higher and continues higher from here. And it is now up almost 1% on the week after that terrible beating it took. Starts moving above that 1920 level, but before that, even 1840, that's going to get a lot of people's attention. And it begins to build on itself in kind of a virtuous cycle, and money starts coming in, you know, kind of fear of missing out. And okay, finally, it's going to move to catch up with these sharply negative real interest rates and everything else. So this was a big happening this week, what happened. And you can trace it back to some legitimate things. Even on Friday, we got a report, the University of Michigan Consumer Confidence or Consumer Sentiment Index crashed because of these inflation expectations, the lowest level since April 2020. In the height of the COVID shutdowns. That tells you how fragile the U.S. economy is in the notion of, you know, can Powell start to withdraw the punch bowl and taper QE or not? Well, maybe not. And that's why the bond market rallied Friday. That's why the dollar sold off sharply. And that's why the metals fully recovered those Sunday losses. And so now we enter a really interesting period here. Chairman Powell is going to speak at the Jackson Hole meeting of the Fed in 2 weeks. What he says there and how that's put into practice, the September FOMC, how then the markets respond to it is going to set the tone for the remainder of the year. And there's still a reasonably good chance that gold can recover all of its losses so far this year and maybe even post a positive percentage gain by the time it's all said and done.
Well, Craig, there's a lot of interesting threads there. One of the questions I had was, do you think Jackson Hole will play into it? Sometimes we'll see the metals sell down before the Fed speaks.
Yep.
But then afterwards, we'll see that whipsaw of, you know, analyzing every other word and trying to figure out what, you know, what are the algorithms going to key off of. Do you think that there's going to be enough momentum out of that to break above that ceiling that's kind of around that 1830, 1840 area that you mentioned? Because until gold can get decisively going in a positive direction, there may not be enough momentum to sustain a move up to the 1920, the 1960, and then, you know, the higher levels at 2089. So what do you think ultimately will be the catalyst that will get things going in that positive direction. Because on the other side of this fence is, if we do test that 1670 level, 1680 level again, you know, if something tests something two, three, and then four times, the concern would be that it would break to the downside and that would spell trouble. So what will get the positive momentum going medium term where there's some trend that develops to the upside?
Yeah, Shad, you bring in an important point. This is not something where gold's going back to 1920 by next week, right? So this takes a while. You know, the moves up always move in a stair step pattern, kind of like going upstairs, as opposed to these moves down like Sunday that look like you're taking the elevator down. It'll be very interesting to see how things respond to Powell. You know, when this thing really got sideways on us last week, or the week before this last week, I should say, back on Wednesday the 4th, was when Vice Chair Clarita came out and said, yeah, you know, we're probably going to announce a taper here soon. And that's when, I mean, gold was $1,830 then and crashed basically $150 by the time we got, you know, done with the Sunday evening shenanigans. And so that now expectation that this is coming is getting cooked in, which makes me wonder, with the amount of lead time we've had, if it isn't, in fact, kind of a sell the rumor, buy the news type of thing, that all the bad news is now baked in. And it, conversely, a buy the rumor, sell the news in the U.S. dollar. And that's, you know, so many algorithms that trade these futures contracts follow the dollar really, really closely, and, you know, and they're tick per tick. And the dollar, if you look closely as we wrap up the week, really had a tough day on Friday. And on the daily chart, it looks like it may have peaked as well, with a double top just above 93, almost a precise double top at 93.20 on the dollar index. So if the dollar, you know, gets into this kind of buy the rumor, sell the news thing with Jackson Hole, then maybe gold has the opposite. Again, as you said, the first key level was that thing where we were banging up against now 10, 12 days ago. There's a convergence there of gold's moving averages, the 50-day and the 200-day, up there around 1830 or so. You get above those and make new highs relative to where we were 2 weeks ago, and then that's your next step forward. So that's how this will play out. And again, it's mainly going to be, though, a function of what Powell actually says. You know, everybody thought this last FOMC meeting at the end of July was going to give some details, and Powell, all he did was really mumble and stumble his way trying to define what transitory is and what further economic progress means and all that kind of stuff. You know, if he rolls into Jackson Hole and gives a real, real slow crawl toward, you know, taper and that sort of thing, yeah, we could get a pretty significant reaction. But in the meantime, it's just nice to have some technical baselines now that are really, really clear and easy to see. And so we know what to watch going forward.
We absolutely do. And you know what? Gold still has a lot of work to do on the upside. And one thing to consider, too, is you look at that daily chart, gold is still below a lot of the key moving averages. The 50-day, the 200-day, those are trending lower, so we should get some sort of a cross as long as gold continues a little bit of a move higher in the next few days. So let's see how that all reacts. One thing to also take away from this last week, though, is that GDXJ, so the gold stock ETFs, those are ending the week lower. GDX is down 1.5%. GDXJ is down just short of 2%. Take away anything from the inability of the stocks to rebound into positive territory this week?
You know, I give everybody listening to us a homework assignment. Please go to a website where you can plot a couple of things together. The one I use a lot of time is just simply barchart.com. It's free, so anybody can do this. And you can plot together the GDX, which is a major producing senior gold miner index, and plot that with COMEX silver futures, not just over the last month or 6 months, but the last year, 5 years, and 10 years. And you'll see clearly the impact that all of this computer-driven trading has had on the markets. And what I mean by that is, I mean, I think most folks know that there's no human beings really trading stocks anymore. There are some. But, you know, when you go to CNBC shows the New York Stock Exchange floor, what used to be a bustle of human activity as recently as a decade ago, there's nobody there. It's a ghost town. Everything's done by computer. In fact, 80 to 90% of the daily volume on the New York Stock Exchange is just high-frequency trading computers. And they kind of swap positions back and forth, trying to nick each other for fractions of a penny. Well, with that kind of dominance of computer trading, you get some crazy correlations. And that's the correlation I'm talking about. Again, pull up a 10-year chart, however long you want to go back, plotting silver futures with the GDX gold miners. That correlation is probably 95%. Makes no sense, but it's the world that we live in. So why are the shares down 1.5% this week? Because silver has not recovered. Gold has bounced back and is green on the week. But silver never recovered, never made it back to green. So I don't want to overly simplify it or make it, you know, make it seem like it's just this basic in the year 2021. But if you want the shares to go up, I guess you need silver to go up. Now, I'm bullish on silver. I think silver is going to rush to catch up once all this news sorts itself out over the next several weeks or a couple of months. But for now, that's what explains the problem with the mining shares to me. You just look at the chart.
It's a great point, Craig, because typically silver and the shares will underperform, and then they will play catch up and they'll outperform. And generally, silver will get dragged along with gold on the major direction, although it does have that industrial component. But a lot of times the shares and silver trade together, and it's interesting how correlated they all are because of the high frequency trading now. My question would be, what would change the algos? And my question is geared around inflation, because right now most people still believe the Fed's narrative that it is transitory. Most of the supply chain issues that we're going to get resolved, and that once we get past this base effect, things are going to smooth out. But if people start realizing that inflation is here to stay, if that ends up being what plays out over time, and if rates and the Fed are behind the curve, we still have negative real rates.
Yep.
Do you think there's a point where people will change? Because the algos are keyed in by humans. So is there a point where the humans behind the machines finally say, hey, we're going to have to account for inflation. We're going to have to account for these negative real rates. We're going to have to account for the fact that if they have to start hiking rates, usually that signals a rising gold when they start hiking.
Yeah, I don't think the algos change. I don't think they get reprogrammed because it's been there now for, you know, it's the correlation is so obvious. But I just think more human being, carbon-based traders actually start getting involved and buying. You know, we've talked for years about, you know, one half of 1% of all global assets are dedicated to the precious metals and the mining shares. You know, if that just goes to 1% or 1.5%, the thing kind of can take on a life of its own and overwhelm this computer influence every day. Right now, there's just no volume. There's no interest. And so the computers run the day. And a lot of times you'll see that in the futures even, you know, where it's just going tick for tick. The dollar upticks one, you know, a penny, and gold ticks down 50 cents. I mean, it's till we get more human beings actively interested and involved, the computers will continue to control things. But here's the thing, and you're absolutely right, Shed. It is the market, if you will, broadly based, believes this transitory stuff. The line I keep reminding people of is Hemingway's line about how did you go broke? Well, slowly and then all at once. And I think what's going to happen here in the weeks and months ahead is the recognition that transitory, that fails slowly and then all at once. And where we talk about, we probably move up in stages because that's typically how things go. I'll remind everybody listening that coming out of, you know, COVID and the QE programs and the alphabet soup of Fed facilities that came out in March of 2020, gold rushed forward. And then spent about 100 days from April into late June, early July, trading in a range between 1680 and 1780, basically where we are now. But then once it broke out of that range, over the course of just 8 weeks, it went from 1780 to 2080. So it can move quickly when everybody kind of moves at once. And silver too. Silver couldn't get above 18 or 19 for 6 or 7 years. And then suddenly in like 3 weeks, it went from 19 to 29. So it is possible for this recognition to hit all at once. And if I'm right about this non-transitory thing, if I'm right about real rates staying sharply negative, because that's actually where the Fed wants them, that recognition will come again soon. And you just don't want to be standing in the station when the train pulls out. Let's put it that way.
All right, Craig, we're going to wrap it up there. Look, it was a nice rebound for gold, but fact of the matter is there's still a lot of work for gold to do to turn bullish, really, and to draw more investors in. Some people can try to get in early, but in all fairness, too, it's been a very tough game trying to trade gold from the long side this year. You've had a couple good months and more bad months, or at least more negative months. So who knows? Maybe we're getting a change in direction as we move out of summer, but we'll just need to see where next week goes and really the rest of this month into the fall. Craig, great chatting with you as always, buddy. Thanks for taking time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Great talking to you guys. You do the same.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back here to wrap up the first hour of the weekend edition of the KE Report, and continuing to focus on the gold sector broadly as we are now wrapping up the show with Dr. Jim Jones, private investor, becoming a regular guest on our show. Doc Jones, we were chatting off mic about where gold stands after the flash crash early on this week and the full recovery of pretty much $100 in the gold price by the end of the week. It has some of the gold bugs encouraged to say that, look, that 1670 to 1680 level held. That could be a triple bottom or a double bottom on longer term charts. And look, gold produced a bullish hammer, bullish reversal hammer. So here we go. Maybe we have a bit of an uptrend moving for gold. Doc Jones, take us through your thoughts. What did this week tell you about gold? What's still your overall assessment of the gold market?
Hi, Corey and Shad. Nice to talk to you both. It doesn't really change much as far as my assessment. I think you have to be very selective if you are going to invest in precious metals right now. I do see gold going flat to down over the next year, maybe 18 months. Part of that reason is that one thing that does drive gold prices is fear, and with the amount of stimulus that's still coming into the system. And right now, the United States, for example, has the highest amount of job openings ever. There's over 10 million job openings in the United States. So we're not seeing a period where companies are cutting staff, laying off people, creating a lot of fear. I just don't see where the demand's going to come from that's going to drive the price higher. And with that as well, long-term, my forecast is higher, though. Like, I see gold getting up to, above 2,500. That's 3 years out from now, 2 to 3 years out. The problem is that the business cycle, to a certain extent, is broken. The governments aren't allowing a cleansing of the system. We have all these zombie companies. We have zombie individuals. And they're being propped up by government stimulus by getting free money. And so there is no fear out there. As well as once we do get to a point where the Fed will be forced to raise rates because their mandate is fulfilled as far as creating full employment and keeping inflation at 2%, it's running a lot hotter than that. And their transitory definition now is that we don't say that the inflation prices will go down. We just say it's transitory because it's not going to increase at this rate going forward. So we have this massive increase in inflation. And then going forward, we'll get to a 2 to 3% over the next few years. But the thing to consider is once we do get to some kind of crisis that leads to a recession or depression, it'll begin probably as a currency crisis. When you have a currency crisis, what happens is the US dollar strengthens. People go into the US dollar, and primarily that's because over 90% of the global debt in the world is denominated in US dollars. And to service the interest on that debt has to be done in U.S. dollars, creating an inherent demand for U.S. dollars, especially during a time of crisis where it requires more of that foreign currency to purchase U.S. dollars to put to service your debt with. And so when people talk about how money supply is growing exponentially, and therefore the precious metal prices will go up exponentially, that is not true. It's actually never been correlated that way, right? And when they put that extra supply, when the lender of last resort, the United States, to the rest of the world, they put that liquidity out there, it's sucked up primarily by people servicing debt. And when people service debt and pay off debt, they actually are contracting the money supply, because that fractional reserve, that dollar that was created from nothing in the fractional reserve system, evaporates, causing a contraction of the money supply as well, which is negative for gold prices as well. So that's where I stand on that. I just don't see where the catalyst is going to come to bring gold prices higher, and where the demand is going to come through. Even with Basel III, people were expecting that to do something to really raise the price of gold. But if you look at the nitty gritty of it and look at the fine print, they've put in exceptions for the bullion banks as far as what type of collateral they can use and reserves and stuff like that. So it's not a hard rule as people thought, where they weren't allowed to hedge their gold positions with paper. They still can.
Doc Jones, what about the argument that there's so much money that's being printed and continuing to be printed, especially out of the Fed, that should be driving gold to $10,000? We've heard these claims before.
Yeah, but empirically, it's not true, though. Like, the money supply has grown in the last 20 years by a massive amount. And gold prices in the last 20 years, since like 1980, or go back 30 years or 40 years, the gold price has underperformed. And lately, too, in the last 2 years, the gold price has underperformed considerably as the money supply has grown incredibly, right? So, you know, the biggest thing that seems to drive gold is fear, and inflation can be good for gold. It just it's not a guarantee. It's not a 1-to-1 correlation. Especially right now when we're not heading into a recession, right? Like there is so much money out there that's chasing all these goods and services, and so much stimulus money that's creating economic growth, that the base metals and the soft commodities are vastly outperforming gold. Doesn't mean gold's going to go to zero or something like that. Still, people fail to realize that the price gold is today is a really good price for a lot of producers. Like $1,500 gold is a really good price. You can make a lot of money mining gold and selling it for $1,500 an ounce. That's a really good price. It just means that if you are investing capital, you want to go where your capital is going to have the best chance of appreciation. And gold doesn't appear to be that place yet. It will be, just not probably for 2 years.
You bring up a good point there as far as, you know, these are good prices for the producers. You know, $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 gold, they're going to be fine. Same thing with silver. You know, anything above $21, the producers are making money. But just back to the point you were making about the money supply and how that really hasn't impacted the price of gold. A lot of people make the argument, I'd love to get your thoughts on it, that what we saw out of the great financial crisis to present, really, you know, over the last 12 years, most of that money was not being loaned out to individuals. It was not getting into individuals' hands. So there wasn't the velocity money. And so we also didn't see inflation. Over the last year or so, there has been trillions of dollars put into these programs, and there has been the repo markets. There's been a change in that. There is now the velocity of money. And when money creation is leading to real inflation now, and we're starting to see that in prices, and like you mentioned, the commodities prices started taking off a little bit. Do you think that there could be a narrative for gold where it could still do well, not based on crisis, not based on black swan events, not based on geopolitics, but based on monetary policy and an increase in inflation, and when the central banks finally have to cry uncle and start hiking rates, could that be something that underpins gold? Because that would also eventually cause the dollar to roll over. The other point you made was that the dollar is sucking up, kind of Brent Johnson's dollar milkshake theory, that it's sucking up, you know, the investment capital. Mm-hmm. We saw that in spades during the pandemic crash. When everything crashed, the dollar got the bid, and gold and silver and the miners still got sold off. But they also did bounce back very quickly. And a lot of that was based on the new narrative of, hey, there could be real inflation from all this money printing. There could be real ramifications if the velocity money picks up. Could it be a monetary policy that causes gold to get a bid medium term to longer term?
Well, I disagree with we don't really have a lot of velocity in money right now. Like the banks are not lending. And the savings rate is the highest it's been in decades in the United States. So people are not spending that money. So the money is not multiplying out there. And there's also a lack of demand for loans, because people have been given money by the government and whatnot. And compared to the financial crisis, we had almost an imminent failure of the global monetary system, which we don't have now. Back then, we had massive layoffs across all industries, which we do not have now. We had massive foreclosures. The depreciation of hard assets, which we don't have now. We have the opposite, right? So there isn't a lot of correlation between the financial crisis and our current state of affairs. It's actually quite opposite. You would think that with interest rates being negative, almost negative, and the nominal rate, and then the actual real interest rates are negative, that you would think the gold price would be much higher, right? But it's not. And part of that reason is because we don't have that fear factor that's out there. So we're still in an expanding economic environment. The next 2 years, the GDP is going to grow drastically, and capital is going to chase where it will be treated the best. And right now, it's not the gold market. There isn't any fear out there that will drive that. And and also within the gold producers itself, you look at, instead of investing in bullion, but in producers, the headwinds that they have, there's a lot of new government policies that are slowing down permitting and making it more expensive for them to do business. The comps between last year and the year before, energy prices have risen quite a bit. Labor prices are rising everywhere. The cost of steel, wood, copper, anything that you need for a mine, the equipment, and also the lag times to get those things. Try to get like a winch for a mine. Like, I've talked to a guy and it's like it's taken months and months longer than it did in previous years just to get the basic equipment he needs to get his project up. So those things are really hurting the producers. So you'll probably see their margins contract, right? And contracting margins is not a good investment thesis for people, regardless of the price going up. And those commodities, those base metal commodities, things like that, and the goods and services that you need to build a mine, run a mine, are increasing faster than the price of gold, which has been on a downward trajectory for over a year now, right?
Yes, that is very true there, Doc Jones. And it's an interesting take. Different a little bit from what Jesse Felder had to say in the first couple segments, but hey, I respect the way that you look at the markets as well. Where are your focus now? How are you managing your portfolio? What are you focused on in terms of making money for your portfolio?
Like I look at things from the guys, the viewpoint of as an investor, which I am, right? That's what I do. So I have contracted my portfolio over the last few months. I began the year, generally I have a very focused portfolio. I began the year with close to 15 stocks, and now I've pared it down to about four, raised cash, and also have been doubling down on my best investments that have performed well, and also, you know, I have more data has come out that I can test my thesis with. And as that thesis is being proven and strengthened, then I go heavier and heavier into that. So I'm heavily in the base metals that do have, like, you know, Amerita Resources is my largest holding. They came out with their assays today after waiting 6 years, finally got into that project, and they've proved up the historical, which is great. And they've got two rigs running and a lot more data coming through there. And I have maintained one gold investment because of their location, the historic resource, and the fact they're cashed up. Like in general terms, without talking about specific stocks, what I'm looking for and what I'm constructing now is a portfolio of companies that are developer late stage exploration, that the resource underpins the value of the company, as well as they are completely cashed up for at least the next 2 years, right? So because the problem is that, like, especially in the gold sector, as far as the gold stocks, they raised a bunch of money last year and they went out and they drilled a bunch of drill holes. And even when they were really good, it didn't move the stock price. In a lot of cases, it's lower now. So we're looking at another round of massive dilution in the gold sector for these companies that have weak treasuries, because they didn't get the response that you would have thought they would, where they came in with a really good drill hole that connects the dots of the deposit. They grew the deposit. It went from, hypothetically, from 1 million ounces to 1.5 million ounces. But now their market cap is less than it was at the beginning of the season, and they're going to have to raise money again which means a lot more dilution. Like I'm fearful of the dilution factor, because the next round of dilution that comes from raising money in the explorer sector, I think, is going to be very, very tough. And your upside can be diluted away. You know, market caps can grow, but if the share count has expanded, then the stock goes nowhere. And in the end, you don't make any money that way, right? Yeah, so I'm staying, some energy weighted towards natural gas, because natural gas prices are and the supply-demand fundamentals for natural gas globally are really good, especially in North America. Like in California, the natural gas is going for over $5 an MCF, which is amazing price for natural gas, considering it was under $2 for the last few years. And sticking to copper, zinc, lead, polymetallic, with some precious metals credit, so that if something that goes into production a year or 2 years from now, as we enter what I think will be the bull market for precious metals, then those companies will, those credits will essentially cover the cost of producing all the other stuff. You know, their cash costs will be negative, which is really nice.
All right, Doc Jones, we're going to wrap it up here. I always find your comments interesting, and yeah, maybe unfortunately not as bullish as some of the precious metals bugs would like, but a bit of a different take on what just is driving the precious metals here. And hey, you're speaking with it to your portfolio by limiting some of your positions and I guess seeing kind of where this all leads to. Doc Jones, it's great having you on the show. I really appreciate your time. And everybody, thank you for tuning into this weekend show. Boy, oh boy, it was kind of a roller coaster ride for the precious metals this week. That's why we focus so much on the precious metals. Let's see what next week has. And please keep up to date with us on our website, kereport.com. And you can always email Chad and myself, either Chad at kereport.com or Fleck at kereport.com. We love hearing from each and every one of you. Doc Jones, everyone, thanks for your time this weekend. I hope you all have a great weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.